Chapter 1. I fell in love with William Ashe at gunpoint in a Circle K. It was on a Friday afternoon at the tail end of a Georgia summer so ungodly hot, the air felt like it had all been boiled red. We were both staring down the barrel of an ancient creaky 32 that could kill us just as dead as a really nice gun could. I thought then that I had landed in my own worst dream, not a love story. Love stories start with a kiss or a meet cute, not with someone getting shot in a gas station mini-mart. Well, no, two people, because that lady cop took a bullet first. But there we were, William gone as still as a pond rock, me holding a green glass bottle of Coca-Cola and shaking so hard it was like a seizure. Both of us were caught under the black eye of that pistol. And yet, 17 seconds later, before I so much as knew his name, I'd fallen dizzy down in love with him. I've never had an angel on my right shoulder. I was born with a pointy-tailed devil who crept back and forth across my neck to get his whispers into both my ears. I didn't get a fairy godmother or even a discount talking cricket bug to be my conscience. But someone should have told me. That afternoon in the Circle K, I deserved to know, right off, that I had landed bang in the middle of a love story. Especially since it wasn't, it isn't. It could never be my own. At 11 o'clock that same morning, walking into gunfire in someone else's love story was the last thing on my mind. I was busy dragging a duffel bag full of most of what I owned down the stairs, trying not to cry or, worse, let my happy show. My mother, never one for mixed feelings, had composed herself into the perfect picture of dejection, backlit and framed in the doorway to the kitchen. I wanted to go, but if I met her eyes, I'd bawl like a toddler anyhow. This tidy brick bungalow on the mountainside had been my home for 17 years now, ever since I was 4 and my parents split up. But if I cried, she'd cry too, and then my sweet kid would lose his ever-loving crap. We'd all stand wailing and hugging it out in the den, and Natty and I would never get on the road. I tightened my mouth and looked over her head instead. That's when I noticed she'd taken down the praying hands Jesus who'd been hanging over the sofa for as long as I'd had concrete memory. She'd replaced him with a good shepherd version who stopped me dead in the middle of the stairs. The new Jesus looked exactly like her. He was super pretty, slim, and elegant. He was backlit, too, standing in front of a meadow instead of a kitchen, cradling a lamb instead of a spatula. My mother had never once gone into direct sunlight without a hat and SPF 50, and this Jesus shared her ivory bloom complexion. I looked more Jewish than he did. They had the same rich brown hair glowing with honey gold highlights, the same cornflower blue eyes cast sorrowfully upward to watch me struggle a 50-pound duffel down the stairs. Neither offered to give me a hand. Mimi wasn't anywhere near ready to let me go, and the thought of having to fight my way out of here made me want to flop down onto my butt and die on the staircase. "Please don't make this awful. This is the best thing," I said. But Mimi only stood there, radiating lovely sorrow. The pretty my mom has, it's an unfair amount, simply ungodly, and it worked on everyone, even me sometimes. "Maybe for you," she acknowledged. "But Natty..." That scored a hit. I was trading Mimi's mountain full of trees and deer and sunshine for my dad's 3-bedroom condo, sleek and modern, bang in the middle of the city. But all I said was, "Oh, Mims." We'd been having this fight all week. Dad's condo was 10 minutes from the Georgia State campus, and from Mimi's, I drove about 4 hours round trip. I had to register my classes around Atlanta's rush hour and make sure they all met either Tuesday, Thursday, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday. This was enough to make a simple coffee date an exercise in logistics, and Mimi didn't help my social life go easier. She'd been boycotting anything with a Y chromosome for going on 17 years now. Even her cat was female, and she'd been known to change my shifts at her candy shop if she knew I had a date. I would have moved to the condo long before if my stepmother, Bethany, had ever let my father make the offer. She hadn't. Not until last week, when the results of Natty's tests came back. Dad had set them up after Natty taught himself to read. The tests said my kid was rocking an IQ north of 140, which put him firmly in the genius category. My 3-year-old could probably apply to freaking Mensa.